Blog Talk Radio.
And that's right, we are here for the End Zone and Falcon Zone Super Hour. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, and also Mr. Reggie Walker. How are we doing, guys?
Doing great, Jeremy.
Hey, doing absolutely good, Jeremy. Glad to be back on.
It is definitely good to have you back on. But we've had a handful of pretty big things go on between the world of the NFL and, of course, Arthur Blank's Falcons. A few of the things we'll get into a little later. Status update on Drew Davis. We're going to talk about the Hard Knocks trailer and what Matt Bryant did with his time off. But we do want to jump into the End Zone stuff first. And, you know, just right out of the gate, let's get into it. The Saints tight end Jimmy Graham, the arbitrator determined that he was a tight end. What do you guys think about this?
Well, from a fan perspective, I think that was a terrible injustice to Jimmy Graham, and it's at least something that they're going to have to, the league is going to have to take a look at as a whole. I've heard some interesting rumors that you know, of some teams now kind of lining up. The Saints have apparently set the tone at 2 first-round draft picks for anybody that signs him to an offer sheet. So, I mean, I think you're going to see a great deal more of that if they don't do something about this scale.
Well, and as bad and cliche as the joke is, you know, giving up, you know, betting the farm on one player sounds right up the Falcons' alley.
Yeah, surprisingly enough, or not surprisingly enough, Atlanta was one of those teams that has been listed as a team that not only has the cap space right now to absorb a max contract for this guy, but considering they're creeping up to a win-now situation with the new stadium coming, it seems like that would be something that Thomas Dimitroff and Mike Smith would pull the trigger on, I would think. The Patriots is also another team that's been mentioned in that list as well, somebody to replace Gronkowski.
Also, I would like to add to it from a infrastructure, from a coach's perspective. One of the things that you have to look at is that particular position now is becoming very premier. From a defensive coordinator perspective, where I'm on that side of the ball, here's the problem. You don't have a linebacker that can cover most of the tight ends now in the league. A strong safety, although he has the ability to cover in the space, is normally not big enough. The routes that they run are high-percentage routes that cover 7 to 12 yards. So now that position now can warrant the money. Not that it didn't in the past, but if you go and put it on a chronological timeline, you go all the way back to Winslow, back in San Diego, you pay it forward with the Sharp brothers, when you know Green Bay and Denver, you move forward and you start to look at now Tony Gonzalez, over the last 12 years, and now you're looking at Jimmy Graham. So now that position and those teams that are lining up are teams that realize that there is a high demand at that particular position because of what it can do to a defense, and how now if your quarterback finds himself in trouble and they're not getting the ball down the field, you now can sustain plays on third down because you now have this extra threat on the field consistently.
Right, and I guess I need to define the parameters that the arbitrator used. The main things, that there was two main things that he said that built his case to say that Jimmy Graham was a tight end. And one of those was that he defined a tight end as anybody who, I believe it was anybody who catches passes who lines up within a four-yard perimeter of either the left or right tackle, which gets into another argument we'll get into in a minute as to wouldn't a slot receiver technically be a tight end. But the most interesting point that he tried to make was that Jimmy Graham is considered a tight end because his Twitter account lists him as the Saints tight end.
And right. I thought that was very interesting as well, and I used that as an example to some other people about how powerful the social media is becoming in these types of arbitrations. So you just have to be careful when you have these accounts. You can incriminate yourself, or in Jimmy Graham's case, cut himself out of millions of dollars because of how he listed himself.
Right, and the funniest thing of this entire situation was that the tight end for the Cleveland Browns, Jordan Cameron, in response to that ruling, went and changed his Twitter account to say Jordan Cameron, Browns pass catcher.
Interesting. Yeah, and let the games begin.
Well, the thing I find interesting about it is that this would be no different if a quarterback, and you can name any of the quarterbacks, just pick one in the NFL that said that I'm a quarterback. I think he, you know, again, he's listed that on the roster. But now what the argument is going to come in, first of all, here's the first piece of the argument. The arbitrator is not a coach. He is defining this based on position and lining in the field. As you spoke of earlier, there's another argument that's going to come along with that later. However, he's listed in the organization as a tight end. But the argument from his perspective is that, look at my productivity. Am I really a tight end? Because based on what you're saying, traditionally, tight ends were made to block and catch very few passes, okay?
Right.
Now, that position has, if my memory serves me correctly, he probably had more catches than most of top receivers in the league this past year. So now that's where his argument comes in. I'm no longer, I have the title of a tight end, but my productivity is that of a receiver. And so now we're talking about a $5 million gap between what he's going to make at $7 million and what his market rate would be at $12 million as a receiver.
Right, and also there's a couple deadlines. I believe the latest one is he has until the Friday before the Week 1 game against the Falcons here in the Dome to sign the franchise tender. Or he can, I mean, he can very much just not sign it, which, you know, as we were kind of saying before the show, there's a good chance his agent may say, I wouldn't sign that. Let's hash out a deal this summer.
Well, if I were his agent, I would definitely give him that advice, considering the amount of interest that he's already drawn across the league of those teams like the Falcons and the Patriots and the Packers were mentioned as well, as those teams, I believe, would give up two first-round picks for this guy.
I would concur. I mean, as a coach, and you know, and also doing player personnel, I most definitely would not be afraid to do that, because where he is now and what that position holds on the team now, and his consistency over the last 2 years proves it. I mean, I would not be afraid to give up two first-round picks for him, especially if I feel that I'm solid in the areas across the board and I got the backups where I want them to be in the next 2 years.
Right, if you're a team that's only one or two pieces away from either a serious playoff run or, you know, possibly even a Super Bowl run, I mean, that's why teams like Atlanta and New Orleans New England are always going to be at the top of these kind of lists. These are teams that could be between one to three big pieces from Hoist and Lombardi at the end of the year.
Well, I most definitely see Atlanta probably making the pitch first and foremost. It's because of what they've lost at that position already. So if it's anybody that probably is in the position to make the move without it costing them the most, as Reggie spoke early on, it would be Atlanta. So I could see Atlanta at least putting the offer out there. And I think what New Orleans is trying to do, because now we're going to talk about the executive side of it from the player personnel and the general manager standpoint, I think what they want to see is who would be willing to make the pitch. It doesn't mean that they're going to actually accept it, but they do get an idea of knowing when they're going through these negotiations what they're up against, and Atlanta right now is sitting at the top of that list.
Yeah, as a fan, I would definitely love to see them make that move. They definitely it goes back to even an earlier conversation that we had some time ago when we were talking free agency with them stealing or signing Jarius Bird, a player that Atlanta was going after. So I can see Dimitroff making that kind of chess move and trying to poach this guy away from the Saints, because obviously if you add him to what Atlanta already has, that's a dangerous, dangerous offense to have to contend with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I respect Jimmy Graham's play. And you know, as Drew Brees said earlier last week, he said that he revolutionized the position. And he's one of those guys like Tony Gonzalez who has proven that the tight end is not just another lineman, as those other guys, you know, as the Sharps and Kellen Winslow Sr. and all those guys did as well. But my problem with Jimmy Graham, and why I don't know that I would necessarily want him on my team, is I don't feel like he's a team player. I feel like this situation is really proving my point that he's always been about just Jimmy Graham and that's it. And usually those kind of attitudes don't mesh well with Atlanta teams.
Well, they don't mesh well with the old Atlanta teams. Again, remember, Arthur Blank is trying to shed the good boy image with the team. We see where that hasn't gotten us, and I think, again, he's that guy that brings that attitude that you're looking for that goes along with that more, the tougher team mentality that is now Atlanta. So I have seen that, and I know exactly what you're talking about, but again, he's one of those one-of-a-kind guys that you just cannot afford to allow escape if you got the opportunity to go get him.
Speaking on New England, and I've always spoke highly of what that organization has been able to do from a system standpoint. If they did not see him fit into that system, they would have never added their names to the tentative list of actually trying to attract him there. So obviously, they have room and they have the pieces in place, and they feel that their leadership there can control and or at least contain some of that. Because again, they have been one of those teams that have constantly shown up in postseason play, if not in the Super Bowl.
Right, and, especially while we'll get into something I want to say about New England that I've kind of come across recently, but as far as the Jimmy Graham situation, we can kind of transition into another story that has kind of popped up in the last couple of days, and that's former Atlanta tight end Tony Gonzalez, now that he works for CBS, wrote a letter or some sort of article to where he basically said, to the point of he feels like the tight end position gets disrespected by the NFL.
Right, and that goes along with what Coach Hill was saying, is that, traditionally, considering the fact that the tight end position has always been one of just kind of blocking and a utility player, and now you've got the Grahams, the Gonzalez's, the Camerons. These guys are going out there and producing at the level at or above most wide receivers. It's a valid point now, and it's one that the NFL is going to have to figure out, or these teams are going to have to figure out, especially when you've got linemen going number one in first round and all these other positions. I don't think I can remember the last time a tight end has gone in the top 10 in the first round. So he definitely has a valid point.
On top of that, again, if you're going to, here's the problem with what the arbitrator basically did in his findings. He defined the position. The problem with defining that position is now you have to place a job description on it permanently. So now does that say that a center can only do this, and what is his job description going to be? A quarterback can only do this. A running back now, is he going to be just defined as just that, a running back? He's not going to go out and catch passes. So here's where this thing is going to get real fuzzy for a minute, because now you open up this floodgate for every position to now be defined.
Right. I didn't think about that point. It's a great point, Coach.
Right. And then, you know, as a lot of SEC fans have kind of brought to my attention, and we'll get more into that as the big show comes up later, but there's certain new positions that are built in college now that are these hybrid positions that once they translate into NFL or once they start, you know, calling them the same thing they do, such as the Auburn Tigers use the star position, which is kind of a mix between a defensive back and a safety. He's kind of like, it's kind of like a permanent nickel situation. But, you know, when those kind of hybrid players and positions on the depth chart become NFL things, it's going to be real fuzzy and a real big gray area to determine what exactly each position is supposed to do. But to jump into the Patriots story I'd kind of heard, and for the most part it was just a few prominent media guys kind of talking back and forth on one of their shows, but it was brought up that in the same way the Browns aren't necessarily happy with Johnny Manziel and what he does off the field, there's kind of a rumor going around the NFL that the Patriots are not exactly thrilled with the fact that Rob Gronkowski kind of leads a similar lifestyle. He's just not on TMZ all the time.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot more of those character issues that are starting to pop up again. You got to wonder how much of it is overkill in the case of Johnny Manziel. I think he was going to draw that anyway. But with Gronkowski, especially when you've got a guy that's probably been hurt 60% of the year the last couple of years and he's getting paid a nice amount of coin, you're going to start seeing those contracts again, much like Tyrann Mathieu, Honey Badger out of Arizona,
yeah,
making sure that, hey, we have these guys, the reins pulled on them so that they don't embarrass the franchise or even worse. I mean, even with Josh Gordon, I know we're coming up with him. Those types of situations start arising, and now you got yourself in some problems.
Well, character from a coach's perspective is the foundation and the formula of the basis of a player. And, you know, again, you know, we spoke about this in earlier shows about, you know, it's no different than a Fortune 500 company. You have a code of conduct. You have ethics. You have all these things. And the problem that I think a lot of the players, where they're starting to miss it and they're not going to believe the impact of it until they begin to find these guys, is that you are still employed by the National Football League even out of season. Just because you're not in season, so you don't get a chance to turn this switch on and turn this switch off when you choose to, it's because of what you represent and who you're employed by. So this is going to be a huge thing. And the interesting part about it is how the commission is going to handle these off-the-field issues as it pertains to some type of reprimand and what they're doing with those situations. So I think it's going to be a case by case, but it is something that he's going to definitely quickly start to address, and it'll be interesting to see how it's going to come out.
So Coach, I got a question today, both you and Jeremy. How does the events with Jim Irsay play into tying the hands of the commissioner now, and that he's going to have to be very selective with what he brings down? Not only Jim Irsay, but even Ray Rice is another example where, I mean, clear violations on both parts where there's been no ruling, yet you go back to situations like Michael Vick and so forth and so on. Well, these guys committed an infraction, and they were hammered immediately. So, I mean, how much does this actually tie his hands now in being able to do just what you said and get a handle and wrangle this thing back in?
I think he doesn't have a choice now. I think because historically he's made certain decisions quickly, he's going to have to state that course of action. Why? Because that's what you did the first time. You didn't take time to look at those situations and decide that we're going to do this in a step-by-step process. He quickly launches an investigation internally. He quickly looks at it. He gets that information back, probably within a 30-day period, and then he has to render a decision. Now, the sticky part is when he deals with the owner. That's going to be a little bit different. But, again, because he has been so consistent with the players, that's going to be a problem that he's going to have with the players Association. So he's just going to have to stay his course. Unfortunately, you know, again, the only thing that he can lean on, just like any Fortune 500 company will lean on, is their employee handbook, basically. And that is going to be what's in the players' union contract and what they have on their code of ethics.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up about, you know, usually he is pretty quick and swift with punishments for off-the-field infractions, you know, especially with the Michael Vick situation. But even Plaxico Burress, it seemed like it wasn't even like maybe even a week and suddenly Burress was already serving a suspension. But, yeah, he's going to, like Coach said, he's pretty much going to have to stick by the guns that's brought him this far, and he's just going to have to sit down and evaluate it. And as far as Jim Irsay's punishment, it's going to be interesting because it's not CBA-related.
Well, one of the things I find interesting, guys, is you can look this information up. There's probably about 20 players this year alone that are already probably suspended, you know, serving as many as up to the entire season being out, to 8 games, to the average being about 4. So now, you know, he's already shown a track record now of how he handles the players. The last time, the next level would be the coach. The last time a suspension took place there was with Coach Payton and that group down in New Orleans in 2012. So now he's in a position where he has to now stay that course because that's been his chronological timeline. You know, under his administration, if you look at it, since he's the commissioner, it has been a lot of suspensions, a lot of fines, a lot of money taken, you know, from players. So now he just has to stay there because if he does anything now to wrinkle that, then there might be an opportunity to have some of those people come back. It can boomerang. It can come right back and say, hey, you took this course of action, this particular guy, but you cannot take the same course of action with this guy. So now you're dealing with possible lawsuits and all kinds of things. So in this case, the only thing the commissioner can lean on is what is in black and white, and that's whatever they have as far as their code of conduct is concerned. That's all he has now. He has nothing else, in my opinion, to go, you know, they can basically hold it up.
Yeah, as far as substance abuse and or PEDs, just a short list I've pulled up, I've counted at least 12 to 15 right off the bat, including the guys we're about to talk about. The newest ones to get suspensions, Dolphins defensive end Deion Jordan was suspended 4 games for the first 4 games for PEDs. I want to say Jordan had been in trouble for something else at some point, but didn't get a suspension. The Colts linebacker, Levon Brazil, was suspended for a year because this is his second time for a substance abuse-related one. And as you mentioned earlier, Reggie, the Browns wide receiver, Josh Gordon, was arrested in North Carolina for a DWI. And this is on top of he was already kind of about to get suspended for other things, including a month ago he got a speeding ticket where his passenger got a possession of marijuana charge. And for that one, they negotiated down a 2-game suspension where he was fined for 4 game checks. But that was all last year related. But that was also substance abuse policy related. Is this, you know, just becoming the new norm? Or, you know, does this go outside of football that this is more about fixing the people?
Well, from my position, I mean, Josh Gordon, in my mind, just everything that I've read thus far about him is a different case altogether, in that you're dealing with a young man who has apparently had these issues for quite some time, even before he came into the NFL. So it's just now a problem that has spiraled out of control, which is going to lend itself to another situation where I hope a lot more of these players get more involved. I know Coach Hill and I were talking the other day about a former player that actually has substance abuse help net, if you will, to try to rein some of these players in. But I to that point, Coach, I have a question for you from a coach's perspective and what you've dealt with in the league. An interesting question, and this is a conversation that I had with Jerome Bettis at an event one time, because I recall seeing him hobbling up the stairs after a game where he had taken a tremendous amount of punishment. And my question for you, Coach, is how much does the physicality of the game, I mean, recreational drug use aside, because that's, I think that has a lot to do with the, today's culture. But how much does the physicality of the game, because I've heard this as an argument, play into the player's use? I know there's been some things on the table about possibly waiving marijuana or allowing a little bit more use of marijuana, if you will, because these players' position is, hey, I'm hurting the next day. I need something to take away the pain of the punishment that I took in the day in the game before, especially in lieu of the fact that you got these owners pushing for more playoff games and more games in general. I mean, how much of that actually really is the case as opposed to them just being knuckleheads?
I'm not afraid to say probably 90%.
Wow.
We're talking about men who are physical specimens. We're talking about a game that's probably played somewhere at the speed between 20 and 30 miles an hour in 22 pounds of equipment. We're talking about gladiators. I have seen guys that could not move. I have seen them smashing 1,000 pieces. I have seen them when they take their shoulder pads off and they're literally black underneath them because they're bruised that bad. So what happens, and here's exactly what happens, okay, guys. There is a high tolerance for pain. Athletes are probably the worst. I was just talking to a doctor recently about this. Athletes are probably the worst patients because their threshold of pain is on your imagination. But when they begin to self-medicate, the pain is extremely beyond your imagination. Now, what am I saying? This irreverent use of illegal substances, this is done strictly to kill the pain. We call them pain killers, whether that be marijuana, whether that be alcohol, prescription drugs. If, you know, again, a player in his mind doesn't think that if I go and take a bottle of ibuprofen, that I've done something wrong because I was able to buy that legally. I drank, you know, a bottle of whiskey, whatever it takes to subdue the pain. Because again, we're talking about a short guy that the life expectancy is only 3.3 years in a career. So the fear factor of not being able to play, the money that you don't make because of the result of not playing, this is where you're getting all of this from. It's a compound issue. That's why you're getting the PE issues now. I mean, right now, I remember in my younger days of coaching, I overheard a coach say this during the time of Worldly. And I was not necessarily privy to the conversation personally, but he said, I do not know why these guys take drugs like marijuana and stuff like that that last 30 to 45 days in your system. They come out bitter smoking crack because it's 52 hours.
Wow.
And I actually heard that. And when I go back and I think about that conversation, I think about the Michael Irvin incident. I think about where his trade was. And again, this is no pun intended against him because he's a great receiver. But again, let's look at the facts on the table. Let's look at where his game was prior to the incident. And then let's look at his game after he was being tested every week. He retired soon now. Now, am I saying that there's an association there? No, but I am saying that it's quite a coincidence that his game totally changed after he was being drug tested every week. When they began to court order, force the drug test every week, he retired soon after. So it makes you wonder, what are these kids doing? I mean, this is the fear factor. They're so afraid that the career is going to be over. You know how many guys play hurt? I had a player of mine break his back in a football game. He literally broke his back. We did not know his back was broken until we actually went and got the x-ray done. Do you know he literally walked off the field? I asked him later after we got the x-ray and we talked to the doctor, son, how did you even get up? He said, Coach, I refused them to put me on a stretcher. He said, I knew it was broke. He said, but I refused to go out on that stretch. I was not going out that way. And he literally walked about 10 yards with a broke back. And that goes to show you where this gladiator warrior mentality goes. And on top of that, the part of it, the ugly side of it that we don't see, but we know truly exists out there. I mean, This is what drives them. They're so afraid to get put on the pup list. They're unable to perform, injury prone, out the league. I mean, that's kind of the absolute, unfortunately.
Wow, and yeah, there's I don't know that many football examples, but I know a lot of examples in wrestling that are the same way, and that's all the way from, you know, the WWE and the truly professional ranks all the way down to, you know, small independent shows in people's backyard. I mean, I've seen some really bad injuries, and the guy just said, I can't get carted off. It's not going to help my career. It's not going to help where I'm trying to go. And it's kind of sad that it's to that point with a lot of people. But, I mean, like you said, when the average lifespan of a pro player is 3.5 years, you kind of got to play as long as you can.
Right, and I think the 800-pound elephant in the room that's probably going to help drive a lot of the tolerance level of the NFL is the recent rash of these lawsuits from these former players for all of these injuries that they sustain, concussions and whatnot, as a result of playing in the league. So it's going to get interesting. I wouldn't be surprised, especially now that states like Colorado and Washington are starting to legalize marijuana usage. I wouldn't be surprised to see marijuana usage become one of those forgotten infractions as it relates to this thing based on both points.
Well, the one thing I also like to add, too, is if right now you were to test the league as a whole, just a mandatory drug test, right now I would safely say, and I have no mental reservation saying, you would probably lose 70% of the league in a day.
I believe that.
Yeah, I was about to say that honestly, I think that number may even be a little higher. But wouldn't surprise me.
Because if you did it based on, see, it's not like track. You know, track has a huge list of stuff that they cannot take. You know, the NFL has specific things that they cannot take. However, if you were to just do a mandatory drug test tomorrow, I'm talking about just across the board on all of the players, immediately, you would lose at least 70-80% of the league right now. That's why they do this random drug testing. I mean, it's so many things that lead up to your number falling into place. I mean, if they did it from the beginning of the season up to the Super Bowl, I mean, even up to the Super Bowl, you would think, how many players probably would not even play just as a result thereof? So it's not like it's not known. The question is, it's not if, it's when you're going to get caught if you don't get the help. They have the programs in place. And, you know, the best advice you can give a player is to get into that program. You know when you're pushing it. A player knows when they're pushing it. Unfortunately, it comes out in a different way. DUIs. Domestic violence, fights in clubs, fights with teammates, erratic behavior, all of that stuff, doesn't they know about. And so something always drives it, and if you immediately go into the doctor, they're going to find out, you know, is it chemical dependency or the lack of minerals in the body, or is it a head injury or whatever the case may be. I mean, they put a lot of money into the research of these athletes. So, again, you know, it's one of those things where I would be really interested to know how many players truly play clean. I mean, truly, truly play clean, whether it be alcohol, marijuana, or whatever else. You know, I would be just really interested to know how many of those guys truly, truly play clean.
Yeah, it's definitely something that the league's going to have to look into. But that's going to kind of wrap up the end zone part for now. On the other side of the break, we will jump into all the major things going on with the Falcons. With Falcon Zone, and we do appreciate you listening to Impact Media Presents the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Hour, and we'll be right back after this.
Jeremy, the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with End Zone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Hey, Zoners, it's Jeremy the Impact York. Are you looking for a dinner full of flavor with a little kick? The Tequila Mexican Restaurant is your destination. Mexican food and drinks. Make sure to come by on the weekends for live music on the patio and bring all your friends for a good time. With locations in Dallas. call us and hire them. They are ready to dish out their great food and more. Hi, Jeremy the Impact York here from Bella Mushroom. Are you looking for a great family-friendly restaurant with food that is great and healthy? Drop by the Mellow Mushroom. They use the freshest ingredients to make everything on their amazing menu. Pizzas, calzones, salads, and more, plus daily drink specials. Go to mellowmushroom.com to find the location nearest you.
And that's right, we are here at the Falcon Zone. Once again, I'm joined by Mr. Reggie Walker and, of course, the coach, Haywood Hill. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks, sir.
You know, we got in a really great discussion during the end zone show about some of the suspensions and the way, you know, a lot of these players' mentalities are to just try to play the best they can, even hurt, injured, whatever they have to do, and they're trying to avoid going on the PUP list, which is the player unable to perform list. But that ended up being a great segue into the first thing out of the gate we wanted to talk about with Falcon Zone, and that's wide receiver Drew Davis had surgery on his foot. He's going to be out at least 6 weeks, which is going to put him on that PUP list at least up until about week one.
Yeah, I hated to hear this both from a fan perspective and from a personal perspective because having had some very lengthy conversations with Drew Davis, and he's one of those players that I interact with at the games quite frequently. He's a good guy. I think he has some skills, but I think that he was enough on the bubble that one of these potential wide receivers that gets cut during training camp or what have you can sneak in and steal this position, and you can see him on the block.
Yeah, personally, I like Drew Davis, and me and Coach Hill were talking earlier about Drew Davis and what we see. I mean, to me, he has the potential the way he plays, and I hate comparing players because it's every player, it's not apples to apples, it's apples to oranges and kiwis and kumquats and all kinds of stuff. But I mean, he almost plays similar to you know, Alshon Jeffrey in Chicago or you know, those kind of guys, to where even Coach Hill said that there's a potential that down the road he could be the one to edge Roddy White out of the second wide receiver position.
Yeah, I see that. Actually, I think that he has more speed than Roddy White. He's a big target like Julio Jones. And I think if you want to line up and you don't go after Graham, as we spoke of earlier in the show, on end zone, and you don't fill that void with a Jimmy Graham at that tight end spot, you can easily slide Roddy White inside the slot, and he can pose a big problem for you because there's not an outside linebacker that can cover him. You're not going to be able to chip him. And there won't be a safety that can get him in space. So, I mean, that was one of the things that I mentioned earlier on a show where I thought that maybe Atlanta should have gone up to Steve Smith for that same opportunity. You know, he's not that guy that's going to get vertical real fast, but he's enough in space that he can cause you a lot of problems at 20 to 25 yards.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment. The only thing that I keep in the back of my mind is this win-now mentality that's unspoken. I think is going on in Atlanta, especially with the contracts of the coaches and whatnot that are kind of pending here, that, you know, are they going to give him the time to heal to come back to prove himself worthy of having that position? So that's the only thing I really worry about on his end.
Well, I think he deserved the opportunity for that. This was just something that was a misfortune. He can be back as early as week one, if I'm not mistaken. That's what I heard. And so they will assess him between week one and week four. Now, between the next 4 weeks after that, that's going to be the telltale sign by the time they get to, you know, halfway in the season. So I think he's good up through week one. By week three, if you don't see any productivity out of him going into week four, then he might be on that block. And at that point, they might make some moves even before then. But again, the reason why they can't make the move so fast is because, again, they got to also look at, is his injury. His injury didn't, you know, I don't know if it's going to require surgery or whatnot. I don't think it does. And they got to also look at how they're going to monitor Julio Jones when he comes back to the field. You know, I mean, he'll come back somewhat healthy, but if he goes down, who can they plug right now with the experience? And I think that's one of the things they're looking at on the roster.
Right, and one of the guys who kind of slid into the wide receiver four spot was Darius Johnson, who is a practice squad member last year for the Falcons, and believe he's around 5'8", he's 5'9", 175 pounds out of SMU. Pretty good route runner from what I remember, but you know, you're giving up all that size that we just talked about with Drew Davis going out. I mean, they did sign Courtney Roby away from the Saints. You were saying earlier, Coach, that's probably just a strategic thing for preparing for the Saints. Roby will probably make the team, but to me, when you have a wide receiver injury like this in this kind of situation, I think we're looking at the door being blown wide open for Devin Hester to step up and show us exactly what he's got left.
Yeah, and that was a point that I was thinking about a little earlier. And you know, now you get the opportunity to prove this contract as well as prove the naysayers, as he likes to put it, wrong by coming in and actually producing other than just running back kicks. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how much more he's involved in the offense now.
Well, I do think that they're going to involve him because he does have the game experience. That's the difference. The fact that he's been in enough games, he's caught enough balls, he's ran enough routes, and they are comfortable in at least putting him at the intermediate range, and if nothing more than a couple times running him vertical down the field just to clear space for some things underneath.
Yeah, one other player, too, I like to throw out there, guys, that just kind of came up today is Mr. Andre Johnson out there in Houston, who, from all accounts, has requested a trade. And given everything going on, again, if you don't get a Graham or you don't want to pay that expensive price for a Graham, and Houston says, okay, fine, we can't make this work, give us a third round, a second round for this guy, you got to think, based on this injury here and just the nature of the team, that they wouldn't go after a guy like that, even though he is a little longer in the tooth, but he still produces. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out as well.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's room, as the same way I thought that Steve Smith had a spot on this team if they were able to pull that off. Andre Johnson, I think, would be good in this environment. He'll be surrounded by a lot of guys who will make sure that he for the most part, doesn't run his mouth a little much. But at the same time, he's a passionate football player. He's put up some big numbers in Houston, even though he's had sometimes absolutely nobody's throwing to him. And I think, you know, he just gets frustrated as a player because he's so passionate about it that he wants a good quarterback for once to throw him a pass. And so he's kind of put it up to Houston, either get me a good quarterback to throw that'll throw to me or get me out of here.
Yeah, and his situation was a little bit different. That's where I kind of differ a little bit on the whole attitude perspective, because his argument is that, hey, I've restructured. I've done everything that the organization has asked me to do to provide that space for you guys to go out and obtain players to help us build this franchise, and I show up a day or two late and you don't give me my $1 million bonus on top of the fact that I still have nobody to throw to me. So, again, what would it mean for him to come to a team where he would instantly come into the offense and be able to produce at a very high level with that guy that I think could get him the ball? So I'm watching that situation closely because, I mean, again, he's a little older. He wants to win. And I wouldn't mind seeing him suit up with that red and black too myself.
Well, one of the things I like to add to this, if you guys don't mind, let's move it to the, you know, to the executive level. The, Atlanta is in a wonderful position as far as their cap space is concerned. I don't think that they're panicking by no stretch of the means. I think they're putting together their short and their long list. And I think they're just going to get through the preseason and give the opportunity to the guys who've been there, the guys they promoted, guys that they brought in, and they want to really see how they're functioning. And if they don't produce, you know, they know that the Steve Smiths of the world are sitting out there, Andre Johnson wants a trade. They know that these things are out there, and they have the money provided in their cap space to do it. So I think right now they're just going to kind of – they're playing the, you know, the wait-and-see approach. They want to get through preseason. They want to see what the roster realistically looks like after the first cut. Probably by the second preseason game, you'll start to see a lot of activity start to take place. So they can formalize again. And if they do got to go after some of those guys, they most definitely want to get them into preseason games in their system. So, again, I think Atlanta has they just have done a wonderful job. Mr. Blank and the whole organization have made room and provisions for things to happen this year. And they will not get caught basically with their boots on, for the lack of a better term, than they did last year. So they're going to be ready this year, and you're going to see a huge shift in this atmosphere for the fans as well as the organization itself.
Right, and a huge part of making that bigger impact that they're trying to make and change the culture a little bit is, you know, they finally released the trailer for the Hard Knocks series that's going to be coming up. I believe it starts August 5th on HBO. I don't have the time, probably 8 or 9 o'clock, I would imagine. But you can go to the Falcons' Facebook, their Twitter. I'm sure at this point you could just random search it and find it. But have you guys gotten a chance to see this video yet?
Yes, absolutely. I took a look at it the day it was released, and it excited me a little bit more. You guys know I wasn't a big fan of them accepting this invite this year or any other year for that matter, just for the distraction that it can bring. But it definitely got me hyped. I've got my DVR already set, so I'm looking forward to it now.
I can't say I've had an opportunity to look at it as of yet, but I'm most definitely going to look at it this week. I'm quite interested to see how the organization handled the, you know, the extra attention that they received with this.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to see it as well. I don't know why. I wish I had a good excuse. I haven't clicked over to see it yet. I keep forgetting it's there. But, yeah, it's from what everybody said, everybody's kind of had the same reaction you did, Reggie, that it gets you a little more excited about it. It seems like it's going to be a really, really positive thing. And, you know, it's not just a publicity stunt. It's going to actually show the fans what's actually going into making this machine work the way it does.
Right. I think it's going to be a good time. It's going to be interesting to see what Mr. Rider White has to say during this entire series. I'm anxious to see how much he's going to be censored or not.
Yeah, I think he'll definitely be one of them. We mentioned a ton of players that have those type of personalities that they could really shine here, or it could really kind of be more on the entertainment side. But, you know, speaking of one of those guys, the kicker Matt Bryant, who, as far as I know, hasn't missed a big kick in a long, long time. The players were given basically about 3 or 4 weeks off between some of the appearances and some of the mini camps, and then about 15, 14 days from now is when actual training camp will start up. But Matt Bryant spent some of his time interning at the Georgia Aquarium.
Yeah, interesting. I read that in your notes, and I wasn't privy to what was going on with that, so I'll let you speak on that, and then we'll go from there, because I didn't hear that.
Well, basically, he took some of the time, and it's something that's, I don't know if that's his career path or something that he had before football, or if it's just a passion he has, but as Coach Hill mentioned, as we were speaking before the show, in a way, this could be setting up maybe a post-football thing, or maybe it's just something he's so passionate into that he decided to look into it. Now, a lot of people were like, oh, because he's a Falcon, he was able to get in like this. It's like, actually, I think the connection is a little deeper than that. I think at some point he may have mentioned to Arthur Blank about having an interest in helping out up there doing something, to which Arthur calls his longtime Home Depot buddy, Bernie Marcus, who basically created the aquarium and made this happen. But because of that connection, you know, he's getting to maybe live out a childhood dream even. It's just like being a zookeeper for a day. He was pretty much with every animal, getting to interact and just, you know, see what it's like to help run such a great facility as that.
Yeah, that's outstanding. I mean, I love it when players are starting to look beyond their playing years and getting involved and doing some things that they like to do. So that's hats off to Matt Bryant for that.
I would also be interested to know if this is something that he studies in college, if he has a degree in marine biology or in biology period or something of that nature. Because, again, if he does, then, you know, that's great for him because that shows that he went to school and now he's looking to work his degree after his professional career is over.
Yeah, I'm trying to get that information now. I got the stat guys working hard trying to see exactly what maybe what his interest was in college. Let's see. Went to Oregon State, I believe. Later went to Baylor. Actually, when he was undrafted, he worked at a pawn shop, and then he was a personal trainer. And then he was actually a wide receiver for the Angola Hornets. But,
interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe
so,
he could suit up for Drew Davis then.
You know, maybe so, because, you know, looking at his career history here, you got the Iowa Barnstormers, made famous by Kurt Warner a couple years ago, the Berlin Thunder, the Frankfurt Galaxy, both NFL Europe, Giants, Cowboys, Colts, Dolphins, Buccaneers. He was actually a Florida Tusker for a small bit before the Falcons were able to sign him. But, you know, actually he's been quite the journeyman that a lot of people don't, you know, particularly know. And, you know, this is just one of the great guys, and I was able to speak to him a few times. And, you know, the fact that he was able to get into this, you know, more power to him. I'd love to go back to the aquarium. I had a good time when I went before, and it'd be cool to kind of look up and see the Falcons kicker up there.
Right.
But moving on, you know, they did release a wide receiver, Dominique Croom. I think it was just, you know, the war of attrition, basically, because they had to make room for Courtney Roby, the former Saint. But, you know, since we have a few minutes here for winding down on the Super Hour, I did want to mention that Arthur Blank had a picture that surfaced over the weekend, and it's not controversial in the least bit, really, but it was him with a handful of people on either side holding a Atlanta soccer scarf, and they were down at the World Cup in Brazil. Now, this is, in a way, it's part his way of saying, I'm about to be a major player in soccer. And he, to me, he was making the appearance of, you know, hey, I'm a soccer guy too. But, you know, what does you know, him bringing in soccer to Atlanta really mean to you guys?
Well, I think it's an excellent move on his position, on his part, especially given the fact that, you know, he's going to have to fill these stands, and what better to do it with what a lot of people don't realize or want to admit to being the most popular sport worldwide. I think he's especially fortunate. You got to know that was a recruiting trip. He's probably down there recruiting some players or scouting some players or what have you to build for this franchise. But given the tremendous amount of popularity that the World Cup has brought the game of soccer to the United States specifically, it's always been that way for the world, but specifically to the United States, I think it ended up being that was a tremendous power move on his end to bring a team here to Atlanta. I think they're going to do well. I think I know I've talked to some people that couldn't tell you anything about soccer before the World Cup, and now they're watching all the matches, so again, I think he's not going to have any problems, at least initially, especially if he builds a winner. He's definitely going to have some interest here in the city for that team coming up in 2017.
One of the things I like to add, too, is I've talked to some guys that play soccer in high school and collegiately. One of the things that I find interesting about this is that we've tried this before. When I say we, from the standpoint of trying to inject a different type of sport, I think soccer probably will fit. Logistically, it fits. Medically, it will fit. But one of the problems that they're going to face is that we don't see enough of soccer. World Cup is the only event that allows us to see it on that broader space. And the United States did a great job this year, considering that we're playing against a lot of teams that have soccer as their major sport in their country. One of the problems I think he's going to have is that he has to assemble a team full of superstars, because he has to be able to sell the facility. Now, you're going to get people to come in to watch the matches. That's not going to be the issue. But the thing is that they're going to be there to watch their teams and or support their country. So now you're looking at World Cup and you're looking at those 16 teams, top teams that made the tier, and how now does that play a role in getting those teams into Atlanta? Because that's what it's going to take to build it. And, again, in the United States, from a homegrown perspective, the difficulty that we have is that although soccer is played in high school and collegiate, we don't see a lot of superstars. It's not really promoted to a professional level. So that's where I think some of the problems might come in. I think the first 2 years, he'll be able to pull it off, but when we start talking about year 4 or 5, it'll be interesting to see where it goes from there.
Right, and you know, like you're saying, it's going to catch on when we realize how we can make money on it, and it's going to catch on even more when there is that homegrown talent. You know, I mentioned to you, Coach, before that there's a direct link between Arthur Blank and the newest American hero as far as soccer people are concerned, goalie Tim Howard, in that they're just good friends. And I would imagine that, you know, he's probably helped Arthur Blank in some of the MLS stuff and maybe getting him better acquainted with certain soccer people he knows. But he did just re-up with his English Premier League team, the Everton, I believe, is who he plays for 3 years. Well, in 3 years, he'll be 38 years old. We don't even know if he's going to make the next Olympics. He doesn't even know if he's going to make the Olympics. He says he's going to just keep going. But, I mean, at this point, is it worth Arthur's money to buy out that contract to bring that in order? Because in bringing soccer and making it such a great thing to do in Atlanta, it's going to help the Falcons. It's going to have that trickle-down effect, and at this point, it's going to be the collateral at the same way. I mean, is it worth it to buy out that contract and then sign him to the Atlanta franchise?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think you get one chance to make a first impression. I think signing a guy like Tim Howard to the soccer team would be the equivalent of going and grabbing Tony Gonzalez and bringing him in. Not that they can be compared athletically, but based on his performance in the World Cup, they may be able to be. But I think, again, that is that superstar player, and we've said this before, even with the Falcons, to sell out that stadium, you need a Lombardi Trophy, you need a superstar on your team, or you need a superstar coach. One of the three is what it's going to take to sell out that stadium. And I think Tim Howard would definitely do it if they were able to make that happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's one of two things that has to happen. One, they have to go get a premier athlete. And I think, Rich, you said it best. They got to go get a coach, someone that is very knowledgeable, but more importantly, somebody who is respected worldwide in the sport. Because that's going to draw those other players in. It's about like trying to get a premier coach in basketball and or football. Once you get that name out there, the players will come.
Right. And, you know, we'll actually debate this a little more. I know we're supposed to be talking about professional football and everything, but because of Arthur Blank's relationship, this is something that we will tackle at a later date. But quickly before we get out of here, the quick note on the Falcons is as much as Paul Werlow has been talked about, he's gotten bigger, he's gotten faster, he's going to be this leader, he's going to be that guy, this bigger role, that bigger role. Just want to say congratulations to the guy. He got married over the weekend.
Hey, man, welcome to the party. Congrats.
He is still a pro now.
Yeah, exactly. He has just taken on an entirely different responsibility that to which the accountability is probably even greater than his actual day job. But for the coach,
absolutely.
Mr. Haywood Hill, and Reggie Walker, I am your host, Jeremy York. Appreciate you stopping by this week. We'll see you guys next week.